Hey guys, welcome to episode 172 of the JV Club with my guest, Lisa Kate David. I am sitting in my car, pulled over on the side of the road on my way back from a television set. Brag alert. I got to get this over to Katie. I can't believe what a crazy busy day it was. And apologize if the sound quality isn't up to snuff. But I did want to get some shout outs in there today. I wanted to thank Megan, Grant, Declan, Joseph, and Liza for your emails. I am still behind on shout outs, guys, but I have been responding to most of you and giving you my thanks via email as well. And I hope you guys enjoy this episode. I think it's a pretty remarkable series of stories from a very remarkable and strong woman. And I think you guys will really enjoy it. It's a pretty fantastic, upsetting, interesting, inspiring story. So I will talk to you guys soon and hope everyone's doing great. Bye.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
I wanted to reassure you not to, I mean, I literally just used the words, don't worry if you have to pee or if I have to pee, we're just going to stop it. And you very thoughtfully said, I won't worry. And then as I was pressing record, the first thing that popped into my mind was those are the wonderful moments where you realize when someone has gone through more than the average person recently to say something like, listen, what I don't want you to worry about with everything you've gone through is whether you have to pee or not, and whether we can stop the podcast.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's probably at the top of the list.
It is.
Thank you so much for doing the podcast.
Absolutely.
Now, you're like a three-person name that do people just say like, now listen, Lisa Kate David, I need to...
I've always had three-person names. My three-person name used to be a little different.
Uh-huh.
And then after I got part of my three-person name out of it's a new three-person
name. Obscure,
so I've always
so
been used to having three-person names.
Yeah.
So, and Lisa Kate David was the three-person name I was born with.
Okay. But I should say, because we don't know each other.
Yes.
Do you want me to call you Lisa Kate David, Lisa Kate, or
Lisa? I always like having all my three names used.
Okay, great.
Right. It makes me feel really important. Right.
And that you have a very crisp identity that no one's going to confuse you for.
Wait, I just have to tell you something funny. So my cousin was a kindergarten teacher, and she actually had a student whose first name was Al Pacino.
Oh, no.
Yeah, Al Pacino. Oh, and the mother, like, she would call him Al in kindergarten. And the mother's like, his name is Al Pacino. Like, have to call him
where
Al Pacino.
Where was this? Where is this?
This was in New York. I can't remember where
in New
York.
If you had told me it was on the West Coast, I would have peed my pants with shock and surprise.
Right?
Only on the East Coast.
Al Pacino. And I think his middle name was, like, Carlito. Like, from Carlito's Way.
Listen,
I know.
Major shout out to Al Pacino.
Al Pacino.
That is bananas.
Who's probably now in fourth grade.
Oh, God. Little Al Pacino.
I know. Little.
He must be. At what point, how quickly did he come to hate his own name, do you think, if you had to guess?
I don't know. I don't know if he knows who Al Pacino is. I think he just thinks, hey, my name is Al Pacino.
There aren't that many movies that you see.
Unless he has like a poster of Scarface in his room. It's like the Backstreet Boys and Scarface.
All the things that are horrifying that Al Pacino's done. That is bananas.
Anyway, I just thought of that. I'm like
very
Lisa Kate
glad
David,
you brought little
he's like
Al Pacino. Yeah. Well, you can call me Jana Varney.
I like
that.
You
can call me JV. Some people call me that.
I like that. It sounds like a venereal disease, but I won't.
Wait, my whole name?
No, just the JV.
Bad
but you know what? My mom doesn't have a middle name, and her initials are VD.
Oh, see, that's why you have that in your head.
I think that's why I have it in my head.
Because most people just think junior varsity.
No, honestly, you don't remind me of a venereal disease.
Thank you so much.
You're
God,
welcome.
If I could have hoped that you would reassure me of something, in the same way I didn't want you to worry, I am glad they reassured me that I don't remind you of a venereal disease. That's a huge relief.
I'm here for you.
What a weight off my shoulders. What a weight off my shoulders. You said your cousin's in New York. Is that where you're from?
My cousin's in New York. Yeah, New York originally, and then moved out here and grew up kind of in both places.
Oh, okay.
Well, went to school at UC Irvine.
Okay. Well, did you go to high school? Were you in high school all the way up in New York?
No, I left in fifth grade and then came here, which was a huge culture shock.
Oh, sure, sure.
Yeah.
So you were here the entire time after fifth
after
grade.
After fifth grade, okay. Yeah.
But you did decide to go to UC Irvine, so you must have adjusted by then.
I didn't get into other schools that I had wanted to go into. Right. So, I mean, Irvine was my first choice.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it really was.
Your first and, wait.
Only choice.
Your first.
My first and only choice was UC Irvine.
Okay. So when you say you applied to other schools, they may have at one point been a priority for you.
I think they really wanted me. I think they just were, I don't know, they didn't want to show the love too much. Yeah. They didn't want my ego to get too big.
I hate when colleges play hard to get.
Yeah.
What did you study at UC Irvine?
Drama.
Okay. That's a decent school for...
It is. They
like
do.
Most universities in this area have a good drama program. Yeah.
So I hear. No, they do. They really do. I'm kidding.
This is what I know about UC Irvine. I've been to or performed at a comedy club there that is next to maybe a Dave and Buster's.
Oh, yeah.
There's
they don't have David
corporate. David.
It's very
little
it's,
spot there.
Well, I was drinking and doing a lot of things when I was in college, uh-huh. So that didn't bother. I got sober when I was 21, so that
Interesting.
Yeah,
we have a similar...
Are we both friends of Bill's?
Trajectory. I'm not a friend of Bill, but I did a lot of...
Are you a friend of his wife?
I'm not a friend of his... Oh, boy, now it's getting confusing.
Lois?
Is that another thing? Yeah. Oh, no, I'm only inside enough to know a friend of Phil. Damn it. Who's Lois?
I think that's her name. I'd be really embarrassed. Uh-huh.
Is that
if it's oh, not? The,
oh, so that is a real thing.
It's part
but
of
it's
the big
not.
Book.
Okay,
but I haven't read the big book in a while, so I'll be kind of embarrassed if I don't know. Lois. I should know, but I think Lois is.
Lois stands for something in the same way that Bill does, but something
well,
different.
Well, Lois is his wife, but Lois started. So Bill started Alcoholics Anonymous, and Lois started Al-Anon.
Oh,
for people
okay.
who are married to alcoholics.
She started that. I didn't ever hear that.
Yeah.
And I've been to an Al-Anon meeting or two with friends.
Lois
mentioned. Yeah, to be honest, it was. But yeah, I mean, listen, what do you think of all this controversy? Not controversy, but like some of the criticism that's come out fairly recently about the program? Do you?
I don't. I try to watch as little news as possible and stay as disconnected as I can, because it really gets me chill.
It's hard. It's really hard. I think that what I've discovered is, because I worked, these guys know, I worked for about half a year at Huffington Post when they did a network.
Uh-huh.
And so I was a host on there, and I was absorbing news constantly, and it was... it was like when a bunch of child murders took place, right? Same point. Then there was the hurricane. Then there was the re-election. So we were covering, there was the Denver Batman shooting.
Oh, God, like, everything.
That was a very intense year. 2013, whatever it was. And I was wrecked by it.
Yeah,
and that's one of the reasons I was like, I can't continue to do this, because this is exactly what I thought would happen to me happened which
to
is,
you.
Well, now I know that there's a reason that I try to. So if you have someone in your life who can be the news filter for you, where, you know, they
John
just
Stewart,
like,
I could stomach it when, you know, John Stewart was on. But then when I went through the five or six really difficult years that I went through, I couldn't even, I didn't even watch the Daily Show. I was like,
you just didn't need any.
I just,
more
I was
to
like,
push you into
I
that
just
place.
Need to keep my shit together as well as I can. And I can't have any, everything on the inside was too intense. So
yes.
I couldn't have anything else on the outside.
Absolutely. Well, I like this, buildup of suspense, for anyone who isn't familiar with what, some of the stuff that you're referring to is, but, do you want to, I'm going to get more into your teen years as well, but I think rather than tease it out any longer for my sweet, sweet listeners who are probably like, now what is this? Why don't you extrapolate or not extrapolate, expound a little bit on
in a nutshell, There's so much, so it's kind of funny to say.
So much that you should be doing a show about it.
And R called Dating in LA with No Nipples. But
what if it ended up having nothing to do with breasts? That was like an expression, an inside joke of yours.
Exactly. Yeah. So in 2008, in October of 2008, I'm just going to cut to the chase. I found child porn on my then husband's computer. And
How long had you been married?
We've been together for over a decade.
Yeah.
And I had a 9-month-old daughter at the time. And I wasn't looking for anything. Yeah. I was actually going online to look at Halloween costumes. And I was just typing in a couple things. And from the history, a site came up called Daddy's Little Girl.
Oh, no.
And I looked at it, and it was an incest site.
Oh, no.
Yeah. It was pretty bad.
What do you do with that?
If
you don't mind.
No, not at all. Not at all.
I've had a couple of guests on who have had betrayals that were large, but not as emotionally shocking.
No,
I
nothing.
Think. You know, like, that's really the, I'm trying
it's
to think
the lowest
of what,
of the low.
Yeah, what
it
else
really,
there,
it really is. I mean,
was there any part of you that was like, no, or was
I
it
saw
just,
it coming? Yeah, no, I mean, no, no.
I don't
no,
know how you see
no.
that coming.
You but. Don't. I mean, there were certain things. I knew he was addicted to porn, you know, adult porn, but kind of who isn't?
Right.
Like, so many guys like adult porn.
That's the thing in this day and age.
That,
people
that
just
line,
sort of
you know,
make
it's so accessible.
For, yeah.
And it's.
But you knew he was addicted in the sense that he was
adult.
He was
adult porn,
he was watching
it a lot certain things, but
like,
adults,
yeah.
adults. And this was, I'm not even talking a Lolita
yeah.
site.
Yeah.
Not that Lolita
yeah.
sites are okay, but this was, you know, 4 and 5 year old
right.
little girls, and it was an incest site.
Oh,
so I flipped out. He was at work. I called him on the phone, and I'm like, what the fuck is on our computer?
God, that feeling, it's a visceral feeling of, I can't, this can't wait. I can't
no,
do
no.
anything,
well,
but like
you just
bullet myself to
yeah,
the source.
And I was so hoping he was going to, like, I was so hoping he was going to say, I don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
You know?
Or like, I looked at it as a joke for this.
Well, he said, I swear I only looked at it once, but he knew what I was talking about.
Right.
And I said, I don't care if it's only once, it's child porn.
Right.
So basically I said, you need to see a therapist right away that specializes in things like this. And if I ever see this on the computer again, I'm kicking you out of the house and calling the police. So,
and did you just immediately feel, for you, was it like a sort of wall came down in terms of your intimacy with him? Because you guys had just had this kid, absolutely. That's so hard too. When something changes your whole scope
well,
of
everything,
what,
like
person.
My scope was, you know, at that point, it's so funny. I was on the pill forever and I always knew I wanted kids, but it never felt like the right time.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was in the middle at the time with a development deal with Fox with a one-woman show I did that I wrote and created that we had a development deal with. And then I got pregnant, and then I was going to wait till after that. And I actually had a discussion with my husband, like, you'll be the stay-at-home dad.
Yeah.
You know, you'll do this because, you know, you never know when this kind of stuff happens and when it doesn't. And I want to take advantage of it.
Yeah.
So it was, I had just had that discussion on him and you know, nothing. It's a feeling that it's completely indescribable. It's just completely indescribable. And as much as I wanted to believe it was only once, and even if I could believe it was only once, which I really wanted to do at first,
right?
It's child porn.
Yeah.
So once is not okay.
Yeah.
Like, it's child porn. So he started seeing a therapist that specialized in deviant sex practices. And I started seeing someone who worked in conjunction with her.
May I ask this?
Mm-hmm.
Did you tell anyone else? Like, were you able to confide
so
in friends? Because that's the other thing.
Yeah.
Is like, you don't know if it's going to get better. Does that mean you shouldn't have brought it up? Because then you're going to be
exactly, exactly. So this is what was super hard about it. It's because you know, it's like, I so wanted to believe I just had a baby. I wanted my baby girl to grow up at home with a mommy and a daddy.
Yeah.
My biggest fear.
And you,
as
far as you knew, that was
exactly
what was
going to
happen.
And my biggest fear when I was a kid my parents separated for a while, but they never told me, but you know what's going on.
Sure.
Was that they would get divorced. And that was always my biggest fear, was like divorce. And, sure. And so when I was going to have a baby, I was like, I never want to get divorced. I always want to work on my problems. And I wondered, you know, I just had this idea of what a family should be and what I wanted for my daughter. So at first when I saw it and I saw the therapist for the first time that worked with his therapist, I was like, I don't know what to do. I mean, do I leave him? But I don't want to be a single mom. And was it only once? But it still isn't okay if it was only once. Is it, am I overreacting? Everybody thinks he's such a good guy.
Was there the kind of question of like, did you find yourself bringing to the surface things that you, like, did you look for other things in your relationship to justify also the feeling of like, well, if I have to get used to the idea that maybe this isn't going to work out, I can look at this, and this, which have nothing to do with this one thing. Because that's always what we do with relationships,
do you know
too.
I met him very shortly after I got sober. I got sober after I was 21.
Okay? So very vulnerable.
Very vulnerable. Mm-hmm. He was a daily pot smoker, probably bipolar, but he was a really talented musician. So I decided to overlook those things.
I mean, you're sitting in a city where this is a city of how many, like, what's okay and what is artistry and like what is.
And potential.
How do you manage your potential?
It's based
on
people's potential. Absolutely. And when you're in your early 20s, you're like, well, he's going to change. I'm totally going to change him. I mean, I'm sober. He's going to stop smoking pot.
And that can be tricky, too, when you've gone through a program like that, is that you, because some people believe that change isn't possible, but if you yourself have gone through that change, you're more forgiving and more accepting of the idea of like,
I did it.
I have to accept the idea that you could.
And the fact that he was probably bipolar, it's like you just, you know, it's kind of like, that abuse is abusive in a different way, but they could be so awful, but then they'll be so great and bring you flowers or something. Mm-hmm. So it kind of keeps you there. And like, he would ruin like every major holiday because he would get really depressed or start yelling at me. But then the next day he'd be so apologetic. So there was a part of me, even when I hit 30, that was like, I always knew if I was older, I never would have married him. Mm-hmm. But I felt like, but I am married. He's not a bad person. Everyone has their issues. And there were a few points in our relationship where I did think, like, before I got pregnant, I was like, I don't think this is going to work. And I actually told him, I think we should split. And then he'd start crying and tell me I'm only looking for perfection. And, you know, and then I believed it.
Nothing is black and white
nothing.
That way.
So then I believed it.
Each column, it's like you could find enough reasons at any time to end a marriage. You can find enough reasons at any time to stay in a marriage. Sometimes those reasons are weirdly the same.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes, exactly. So I kind of, there were certain things I overlooked, and then certain things I think at a certain point I just kind of shut down to, you know, quite honestly. I shut down to nothing like I found.
Of course.
You know, but so I said, you know, I just had a baby. Like, I don't want to be a single mom. That wasn't my intent, was to be a single mom, you know. And she gave me some really good advice that another friend of mine gave me. She basically said I was in shock, and she said what I suggest – and this is something they say in AA too, is not to make any big decisions in the midst of chaos.
Sure.
And trust that more will be revealed.
Yeah.
She's like, you're in shock.
Yeah.
So.
That's good advice.
And then I talked to, there were three people I talked to. Three of my really close friends.
Good.
And
I'm glad that you could.
Friend Jason, who I told, I said, I don't know what to do. I don't know. Do I leave? Do I stay? Do I this? Do I that? Is my daughter in danger? What's going on? Am I overreacting? He told me, he said, put on your calendar a year from today. And if you don't know what to do by then you have to make a decision. But trust me, like, he goes, I bet things are going to come to you. So I did. I marked the calendar a year from today. Mm-hmm. Because as much as I thought, maybe we can work this out, there was something in my gut that's like, you can't work it out. Yeah. Even if it's only once, you can't work it out. And the funny thing was, see, I started realizing I was married to a real sociopath. And the thing about sociopaths is they don't feel remorse.
Right.
So it's very hard to catch them in the lie.
Yeah.
Extremely hard. Like, if I were to ever cheat on somebody, it's like, I wouldn't be able to look them in the eye.
Yeah, I know,
so
I'm terrible.
Guilty.
Yeah, yeah,
I'd be
exactly.
Like, what? You know? I feel so guilty, I'd end up blurting it out. Like, he was able to do some awful things, like more things I ended up realizing, where I'm like, who am I married to? You know? So. And then the thing that was interesting about him, too, was once the light was shown, you'd think after something like this, is found out, you would be kissing the other person's ass and being like, I'm going to be so good now. I'm going to do. And he became like, it's almost like once the light was shown, he felt like, fuck it. I don't have to hide it anymore. Mm-hmm. So he became even more of an asshole. Which
was a sort of a favor to you, I'm sure.
It was, but it was
run,
so
how fucked up.
Surprising. Yeah. Like,
well, also, like, how does that, I mean, that all of this stuff plays into, like, we're not even really talking about, like, how this kind of stuff affects our own personal self-confidence. It's like, am I not important enough to you to, I mean, how, even if you, if, for me, even if I'm contemptuous of someone who's done something that I'm shocked by or I don't approve of, if it's someone I've cared for or loved, I guess for me personally, and you can tell me if you agree, I still would have been like, wait, does this not even matter to you enough that you're not kissing my ass? Like,
well,
hey.
I felt like, I remember, like, even when I wanted to believe it was only once and I didn't know anything more, like, I would go up to him and I'd be like, okay, please help me. Like, I'm really trying to understand this. Like, I know you said it's only once, but it's kids.
Why,
like, how
once?
Can it be
how
only once?
How,
and honestly, he just, like, looked at me and he's like, I guess I'm not getting laid soon.
Oh, no.
And I was like, oh my God, it's like, I felt like he kept thinking he was doing me a favor. Like, I'm doing all this stuff. I'm in therapy. Like, what do you want from me?
Right.
You know, like, he was doing me such a big favor. And I started realizing, like, who is this person?
Right.
And then, oh God. And it was so funny. I mean, they're so deceptive. So this was around the holidays. Okay. So I found
Perfect.
It in October.
His favorite time of year, memory serves.
Exactly. And it was the most surreal thing. It was so surreal. My life became so surreal. I remember he's like, we got to take a picture of the family to send out as, like, you know, happy holidays. We're like a happy family. And I said, can't we just take a picture of our daughter and send that out? Like, why does it need to be of all three of us?
Sure.
And he's like, because we're a happy family and this is what we need to do. So I remember, like, we went out in the backyard and he bought these two poinsettias and he put them around
oh,
us.
No.
And I just remember thinking, like, well, it's so funny the things that come out of your mouth, because I'm Jewish and he wasn't Jewish. So I'm like, I don't think poinsettias are really Jewish.
Fair.
And he's
fair.
Like, and he's like, Lisa, don't you know poinsettias are non-denominational? And I'm like, okay. But I was like, oh my God, I'm taking a picture with a pedophile.
How surreal.
But I'm talking about poinsettias. It's like your mind just, and then it was so funny. I remember it's like you try to create a sense of normalcy in a situation that's not normal.
Mm-hmm.
So we would have these conversations like, I'm trying to understand. How can you do this? How can you, child porn? I don't understand it, you know? And then we'd realize nothing would be resolved. And it's like, let's just go watch The Daily Show together, you know? Cause that's what we did.
Right.
You know, it's like you want to try to create normalcy in a situation that's completely not normal.
Absolutely.
And the more stuff started getting revealed. So in January, he came home one day and he left a piece of paper on the kitchen counter. It's actually comical.
Yeah.
And there were three circles. And in the inner circle, it had like an inner circle and two outer circles. In the inner circle, it had child porn, Craigslist, erotic massage.
What?
Yeah, in an inner circle. So I come home, I see it on the kitchen counter, and I'm like, what is this? And he's like, it's something my therapist wanted me to write. You weren't supposed to see it yet. And I'm like, I guess you shouldn't have left it on the kitchen counter.
Yeah.
And like, I saw it. I want to know what it means. And he said, well, the things in the inner circle are things I'm not supposed to do. So you know about the child porn, but there's a couple things you don't know about. Like, I've been having some online interactions on Craigslist. And when you were working in New York a few years ago, I started getting erotic massages from transsexuals. And I'm like, I didn't even know what to say. And I'm like, okay, was your dick in their ass? You know, do I need to be concerned?
Yeah.
And he's like, no, it wasn't in their ass. But I was like, oh my God, like, who is this man? Yeah. Like, who is this? And I remember I said to my friend, I'm like, you know, your life is really bad when the fact that your husband is screwing transsexuals is the good part. You know, I was like, wow, my life got really low, because on a normal day, the fact that he was screwing transsexuals might really piss me off.
Right.
But now it's like, screwing transsexuals, left the toilet seat up.
Yeah.
Oh, it was like, God. Nothing. And I was like, what happened?
To be that desensitized.
What happened to my life? Because nothing could trump the child porn. Nothing could trump the child porn. I was like, wow, this is how bad my life has gotten.
Yeah.
And
I don't want to push this. I just want to ask because, because of the part of me that's weirdly PC about transsexuals. First of all, it was not at a time when that was something that we were all talking about. But was it more just about the fact that it was a prostitute or that there was that, or sex act?
I have no problem with transsexuals. Yeah. I just don't want my husband's penis in their ass.
Absolutely.
Honestly, I have no problems with transsexuals. Yeah. I have no problem.
But if it had been, I'm just saying that's what it happened to be, but if it had been gay, if it had been boys, been women, like in any case, there's a potential for you to get JV. You know? We don't want you to get a venereal disease like I'm named after.
I don't want any JV in my body.
No, but I just wanted to throw that out
because
there was
not
a time in which that meant something that I don't know that it means anymore.
It doesn't to me. Yeah. It was just like,
but it's still it another was layer of
it was just
absurdity.
It was just the really?
Here's that next ratcheting it up
like,
one more.
It's just like, who is this person?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know? So from the point of finding that information out, then what in terms of the timeline?
Once I started finding things out, so that was in January, I really started realizing like, I don't trust this person.
Yeah.
Like this is not someone I know. This is not someone I knew at all. I started realizing like, I have no idea who I was married to. Right. The person I thought I knew better than anyone else in the world, I didn't know at all. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a stupid person, you know, but
did that affect your relationships with other people at that time? Was your distrust focused solely on him?
No, it was solely on
sometimes
him.
Sometimes that happens too, right?
It does. And I'll tell you about that later, what my therapist said to me when I started dating again. But no, I guess I was lucky enough to have had like, even though some of the guys I dated weren't the best, I mean, no one was a sociopath like him, but my dad was always such a good role model to me, and I love my dad, and I always had good guy friends, you know, so I had good guys in my life. I never was like, I hate guys.
I guess that's how I feel. I never had that when I had girlfriends and through life who would just be like, you know,
I hate men, these guys are assholes. I'm like, guys aren't
some
assholes.
Are, I guess, but I,
exactly.
You know,
I never took it like the whole genders.
That's good.
You know?
Yeah.
I actually love guys, you know?
Me too. Yeah.
But anyway,
and also women are capable of like incredible duplicitousness and all that kind of
God.
Stuff.
And, yeah. And the kind of manipulation women are it blows my mind sometimes. I have a second grader, and I just see like in terms of girl relationships at age, I'm like,
it's pretty
holy
early on that you start
moly. But anyway, so yeah, so when I found that out at that point, I think it became really clear to me, like, I don't know who he is. He's been lying to me constantly. And if I don't know who he is, I don't know what he's capable of. And I think for the first time in my life, because I'm a pretty emotional person, I think my saving grace when I found the child porn is it was such a shock to my system, and something that affected or could potentially affect my daughter and other kids. Mm-hmm. And I was like, there was just a part of me that at that point, but especially afterward, it's like, you need to know who you're dealing with. You need to know who your enemy is.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like keep your friends close and your enemies closer. And I felt like for the first time in my life, I was really strategic, you know? And I felt like he always thought I was just this cute, wide-eyed, bushy-tailed, you know, dingy wife. You know, he always thought I am a little spacey. I can be a little spacey, but he just, you know, was under the impression he was with someone that would never leave him or turn against him. Mm-hmm. And that was good because that's how I was able to get more and more information from him, was because he thought I was his ally. Mm. So he started disclosing more stuff to me. And then basically what happened was my therapist suggested, so I knew at that point I wasn't going to stay, but he couldn't know I wasn't going to stay. So basically, for about 9 months, I was living with the enemy, living with someone who was the enemy. And every cell in my body was screaming. And like you said, I couldn't tell a lot of people because I couldn't do anything that extreme yet. I needed to know if my daughter was in danger. So I had told 3 of my good friends. And one thing that, because my ex wanted to really work things out. So his therapist, I guess his whole MO was, I'm just a sex addict. I'm just a sex addict. So what his therapist did is said, okay, if you're just a sex addict, you need to give your wife a full disclosure. And in the disclosure, you have to say everyone you've ever slept with, whether or not you use protection, what lie you told to be able to do that, how much money you spent.
Ooh, wow.
And I think there was another one. And so my therapist told me, she said, you know, I said, you know what? I don't even care who he was sleeping with. I'm not going to stay with him at this point, but I need to know if he's a danger to my daughter. Mm-hmm. And so she told me, she said, okay, get the disclosure from him and then ask him to take a lie detector test after.
Oh, wow.
To make sure the disclosure was accurate, mm-hmm. and nothing was omitted. Mm-hmm. So he came home one day and I said, this was in June, and I knew he was going to take the disclosure was set for August. So I told him, I said, okay, I need you to take a lie detector test after the disclosure to make sure nothing's omitted. And he flipped out. He's like, how can you not trust me? You're treating me like a criminal. Yeah. How can you do this to me? I hate your therapist. She's a man-hating bitch. Mm-hmm. I'm like, this is what I need from you. And he kept fighting it and fighting it and fighting it. And I remember at that point, I hated him so much. I would be lying in bed next to him at night and I couldn't go to sleep and I would like leave the bed.
So poisonous.
And I remember just being like, God, like, give me some clarity. I need to know when to make the next step. I can't deal with this anymore. It's killing me. I'm dying. I need to get out of here, but I need to get the, I don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to do. Like, show me what the next step is. Mm-hmm. And I'm not someone who's, you know, I mean, I do believe in the magic of the universe. Mm-hmm. I'm not someone who's that religious, but I do believe that, I guess my life has shown me in an AA, and you know, it's a very spiritual program, is that, I don't know. I do.
I think you
connection.
Get out of it what you put into it.
You get out of it what you put into it.
That's the relationship.
And a lot of times I don't put into it until I'm like, you know.
Sure. And that's very normal.
And it's very normal.
Very normal.
But I did. I'm like, I need clarity. Just show me clarity. I need clarity. I don't know what the next step is. Show me clarity. And then the next day, or not the next day, a couple weeks later, I got a call, and it was the day before my birthday, from his therapist, and we drove down there together, and he said, she said, did he tell you why I called you both in here today? And I said, no. And she said, I called you both in here because there are some red flags having to do with your daughter.
Oh, no. Oh,
and
no.
He admitted to me that he had gotten erections around her a couple of times. Once when she was in a bath, and then another time when she was sitting on his lap. And he said this is why he was nervous to take a lie detector test, because he thinks certain things might be misconstrued. So I scheduled one for him to take the day after tomorrow, and if he fails, that Child Protective Services would be called. And at that moment, it really... I just burst into tears. I mean, I was just... It's like there was somehow a disconnect that even though I knew the child porn was bad, that he could ever actually get aroused by an actual child. But one thing does lead to another. You don't just mm-hmm. jack off to child porn and children aren't at risk. And that's why they say that even someone who, like, the definition of a pedophile is someone who gets aroused by kids.
Right.
So if they look at kids' pictures and gets aroused, they're a pedophile. You know, a lot of people think a pedophile is only someone who does something to kids, and that's wrong. That's inaccurate. It's someone who gets aroused by kids because things lead to another.
Right.
One step leads to another.
Right.
And it became very clear to me when I saw that. It didn't before. I knew it was bad, but I didn't realize, like, the depth of it. And I was like, oh, my God. You know, I'm with a pedophile. And it was so crazy. Like, there was one thing I forgot to tell you, and I'm going to bring it up because of something the therapist said. So after I found out all this stuff, I'm backtracking a little bit. He, you know, I told you he never felt apologetic, never felt anything, always felt entitled. He came home one day and he said, Lisa, I feel really disrespected when I come home and you don't fold the laundry. Hmm. And I said, well, I feel really disrespected when you view child porn and you take it up the ass. It's like apples and fucking Godzilla, you know?
Yeah.
So at this point, I'm bursting into tears. And his therapist said to me, is there something you'd like me to tell him? Until he takes the lie detector because he's taking it the day after tomorrow. And I said, yeah, just leave me alone about the fucking laundry. And he said, I guess I just have to sit here and take it, don't I?
Oh, my God.
And his therapist looked at him and said, oh, my God, you really don't feel any remorse, do you? And he goes, no, no, no. Of course I feel remorse, you know. And it was so apparent to me.
Yeah, like, he really
it was
like
so
created.
Scary.
He put himself into the victim role so quickly.
So easily.
Or if not just already living in that place.
So easily. And the next day, this was one of the most surreal. This whole experience was surreal. That night. So we leave there. And we drove there together. And he doesn't say anything. And we're driving back together. And it was the most unbelievable thing. And then I remember I took my daughter and I called my friend Debbie. And she's a friend I didn't tell anything to because she was also friends with my ex. And that's how I met him, met her. But we became really good friends. And I said, will you meet me in Venice? I need to be by the water. So I took my daughter and we drove to the water. And, you know, luckily my daughter was only, you know, a year and a half at the time and couldn't talk and couldn't understand things. And it was so surreal. We went to the sidewalk cafe and I remember we were like looking out and I was telling her everything. And there was a man outside on guitar and he was playing Hallelujah. Hallelujah. And I was just like, oh my God. And then there was like this homeless man who had no teeth and long hair and his gut was hanging out and he was riding a unicycle around and he was trying to balance a plastic water bottle on his head. And I was like, oh my God, like this is my life. Like this is my life. What happened in my life? And then the next day was my birthday and we had plans to go to Disneyland.
It is those huge dichotomies of like the things that seem the most absurd when you're
it was so absurd. I mean, that's the thing. It was like so absurd. So and I remember like I was a zombie and we were planning to go to Disneyland with my daughter and I knew the next day he was taking the lie detector test, but I didn't even know what to do. So I was like, okay, let's just go to Disneyland. But he got up before I did and he left a card on the kitchen table for me. This is how crazy these people are. And he wrote to my beautiful wife, we've got the most amazing relationship. You're my partner. We're such a great team. We have such a great life together. I love you so much. And I remember reading this and just realizing like, does he really believe this? I really think he believes these things. And then we go to Disneyland.
And do you look back and go, like, I cannot believe that we went to Disneyland?
No, I actually can.
Yeah.
Because I was in such shock and I had no idea what I wanted to do. I didn't want to be anywhere. You know what I mean? I didn't want to be in my body. Mm-hmm. I needed to do something for my daughter. Mm-hmm. I thought at least she'll enjoy Disneyland. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what to do with my ex. I knew I was going to leave him, but I had to figure out how to do that. And I didn't want to make a big deal out of it because I didn't want him to do something. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize. Mm-hmm. So I was like, let's just go to Disneyland. Mm-hmm. So the worst thing about going to Disneyland on your birthday is that you have to wear a name tag because you get in free.
That's right. And everyone says happy birthday to you.
And everyone says happy birthday. And it was the most surreal day of my life. I was just walking around and happy birthday, Lisa. Thank you, Snow White.
Oh,
you know,
God.
It was just the most surreal thing. All these Disney characters are coming toward me. I felt like I was a Stepford wife because I had to keep it together.
Sure.
And I just had this smile glued on my face. And then
that's just not a normal way to have to exist in the world. And we don't know how to do that.
It was,
it
was
that way.
And especially when you're an emotional person.
Yeah.
I mean, from the time I was a kid, if I ever had something I needed to tell someone and I wouldn't tell them, I'd get a sore throat.
Mm-hmm.
My body.
I can totally relate to that. My back, if I feel like I'm not like standing up for myself,
or
it's like so literal. I remember going to see someone and it was like a healer or whatever, because I would go to a doctor and they'd be like, were you in an accident? You know? And I was like, no. And she was like, well, that's your spine. Like, that's what holds you up. So if you feel like you're not being true to yourself and you're not protecting yourself and taking care of yourself, your back's going to go out. And I was like, why don't you go fuck yourself? I don't want that to be true at all.
But it's so true. Yeah. It's so true. And I was always like that since I was a kid. And so I remember I was just like, this is the only way you can keep it together right now. And you have to keep it together for your daughter. So the next day, it's so funny the things you do. It's like, I remember the next day he had the lie detector test scheduled. And I took Veronica and I called my hairdresser and I'm like, can you blow dry my hair? I'm like, I just want to look really, I just have to have nice hair today. Mm-hmm. And he's like, okay. And I remember like I told him what was happening and he started crying. I'm like, it's okay. Like, it's going to be okay. I didn't know what was happening.
Yeah.
So and then I went over to my friend's house. My friend Jason, he's one of my closest friends. And he's a writer and he had like a big writing deadline with something, but he took the time and we went on a walk and I remember we were just like talking about life and stuff. And I remember this is so nice. Like we don't really take the time to just talk
we
about,
should do this
just
more.
Like go to the park and talk about it. And then I got the call from my husband and he said he failed the lie detector test. And I remember it was just the most like, and he called me and he's like, he was crying. He said, I failed the lie detector test. That lie detector guy was trying to set me up. I have to go away to a treatment center. I swear I didn't do anything. And I just said, I don't want you coming home tonight. And then I took my baby and we went to my friend's house. And my life just completely changed forever. And then he came by that night and he was like banging on the door.
Oh, God.
And he calls me and he's like, it was so surreal. He goes, I went to the movies to see the new Harry Potter. And then I snuck into Bruno and I tried to sneak into Harry Potter one more time. So but they surreal. Kicked me out.
What a weird through line of just like absurd
it
life
is.
Check
it
in.
Is. But
like
life
check
is.
In with
it
like, this
just,
is what's going on in life.
It was so crazy. And then I remember like, having to tell my parents who thought he was such a great guy and they had just gotten home from work. It was a Friday night and I left my baby at my friend's house and I call him up and I'm like, and they both work so much. And I'm like, hey, can I come over for a little bit? And they're like, is everything okay? Your family coming with you? And I was like, oh no, I'm just coming alone. Is everything okay? Yeah, everything's fine. I just need to tell you a couple things. That was so intense. I remember telling my mom and my dad, my poor dad, you know, his eyes just, the look in his eyes. And then my mom, who's always like, take care of business. We got to take care of business. Got to take care of business. And it was so interesting. She looked at me and one of the first things she said is like, he put you at risk for all sorts of diseases. And it was so funny because that was such an afterthought to me. Mm-hmm. And I realized like, I'm her baby. Mm-hmm. Like my daughter's my baby. Mm-hmm. Like I'm her baby too. And he did this to her baby.
Absolutely.
You know? And now
Absolutely.
Being a mom, like I get it.
Yeah.
You know, I was like she was worried about her baby when I didn't even think twice about it.
Yeah.
You know, it was like nothing could trump the child porn. Nothing could trump fucking with my daughter.
Yeah.
So anyway, kicked him out of the house and turn the computer into the police. It was it was such a kind of crazy thing. I mean, it's a long process. But long story short, the computer said it would take them up. The police said it would take him up to a few months to go through it. So they're like, when he gets back in from this place he had to go to, you have to continue supervised visits, and he still needs to think you can get back together with him while we get the information.
Oh,
no. Yeah. For another 6 months, I had to continue it. And then he wanted to know where the computer was because he kept saying, I need you to hide the computer so when I get back, I can destroy it. And I'm like, okay, you know. And then when he gets back, where's
the
computer?
Like a double agent.
Yeah, I know.
That,
and I'm
like,
my attorney said she needed it. You're such an idiot. She's not going to give it to the police. No, she promised. She won't give it to the police.
Finally, you get to play
it to
again. It's like your ability to play the dingbat that he is trusting you will be.
Exactly. And then, so then there was this whole thing. So then I remember at first it was just, you know, in AA they say one day at a time. I'm sure you've heard that slogan.
Mm-hmm.
And it, for me, it was like one moment at a time. And I don't think I could have kept it together if it wasn't for my daughter. And I remember just wanting to watch preschool television, inundating myself with preschool TV constantly.
Well, it's that, it is that sort of sense of like, is there a way for me to, yeah, connect to something that is so far removed from the place
innocence.
That I'm in.
It's the fairy tale. It's the hope. It's the life is good. Life is pure. Life is innocent.
Yeah.
And then at a certain point, I remember kind of getting my mojo back. And I'm like, I'm ready to start dating. I'm ready to start dating again. I hadn't been on a date in over a decade, and I'm ready to start dating again. And I told my therapist this, and she said, how can you ever trust men again, Lisa?
Oh, no.
She did. She goes, what you've been through, how could you trust men again? And I said, you know what? I said, I don't have a problem with men.
Yeah. Good for you.
I love men.
Good for you.
And I said, what are the odds of something like this happening again?
I mean, that's fair.
You know, it's like in the world according to Garp where the plane flies through the window and you're like, we'll take it.
Exactly.
I'm like, so someone's going to cheat on me with a woman?
Yeah.
You know, if that's the least of my worries?
Yeah.
So I started dating again and starting to feel more like myself. And I remember at first being like, okay, I'm going to have to tell guys I'm a single mom whose ex is a pedophile, but I'm going to do it right away.
Mm-hmm.
So if they have a problem, I'll know sooner than later.
Well, especially having lived in that place of concealing or of having to, you know, all of that kind
of,
I imagine.
Such a big thing at this point. It was like, hated not speaking. I was like, it's not my dirty secret. It's not my daughter's dirty secret.
Absolutely.
And I'm not going to keep this fucking dirty secret.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm not owning it. She's not owning it. We're not owning it.
Yeah.
This is bad.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not ours.
Yeah. I love it. I mean, I love it, but I support
it was
that 100%.
So strong
to me. Yeah.
So then that started going well. And then in the midst of this, I got diagnosed with breast cancer.
I say laughing.
It is. No, it's so funny. Yeah. I remember when I found out I had breast cancer, I had a few of my girlfriends over like a week before I needed a double mastectomy. And my friend, who's a nurse, she's like, you're really lucky, Lisa. You have an angel watching over you. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? I'm like, what, the angel of like child porn and cancer? I think I want a new angel, you know? And she's like, no, but Lisa, with both these things, you found them out at the earliest possible moment because it could have gotten really bad. And in retrospect,
that
she was right.
That's absolutely true. Again, it kind of goes into those two columns we were talking about. It's like you can choose to see your life as your ex-husband did, apparently as a sociopath, to see himself as a victim. But, you know, you can sort of look at things that way, or look at things as how much worse could it have gotten, and how grateful am I that they didn't. And I think that's the difference between, it's like when we don't know the answers, and if we're not specifically religious in a like, oh, I was raised Catholic and I believe God's plan and all that. If it's more ambiguous than that, then the
which
best
most
choice,
it is,
which
I
exactly
think.
Doesn't
at
it
least
just becomes
in LA.
Like isn't the better choice to survive? To be optimistic, isn't the better choice to for survival to say, thank God it wasn't worse.
And
I want to look
you
ahead.
You know what? It's so funny. Like when I look at my life and how things have worked out, you know, I look at it even when I was pregnant. What if I found out when I was pregnant?
Yeah.
I would have been really depressed when I was pregnant. That could have affected my daughter. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what it was like to be a mom. At least when I found out I had a good pregnancy, I got being a mom.
And
at
what
9 months
old. You found
old,
out before you even got pregnant?
Well,
you never had your daughter.
I know, exactly. And she's the biggest blessing in my life.
Yeah.
And she got me through it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like...
And it was a situation in which, like you said, you, like when you experienced that with your mom and the how she looked at it, it's like you were already in a place of putting someone else before you. And so that removed some of this betrayal of
it
the
did,
stuff.
It did.
That,
it didn't even,
as
it didn't even affect
daughter.
Me. No. And it's so interesting. So
you got breast cancer.
I got breast cancer.
Mazel tov.
Thank you.
Both breasts?
Both. Well,
wonderful.
It was in one breast.
Okay.
But they
recommend that you
They recommended a single mastectomy.
Oh, they did. Okay.
And I said, I want a double. I'm a single mom. Mm-hmm. Nothing can take me down. Take them both out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I need to raise my daughter. No one else is raising my daughter but me.
Yeah.
And I got them both out. And it's so funny, like what gets you through things. At this point, I kind of felt like if I'm able to go out and date, maybe my life isn't broken.
Mm-hmm.
So right after, I even went to a dating event with drainage tubes still in from my surgery.
Yeah.
Because I was so determined. I mean, at first, my reason for dating was I want to find my Prince Charming. I want to find the guy who's going to rescue me and my daughter and save us. Mm-hmm. And then slowly that disillusionment went away. But it really... It's almost like when your life is so low and it can't get any lower, your level of honesty and your level of what have I got to lose,
absolutely,
there's a certain kind of freedom to it.
Absolutely.
You know? So I felt like for me dating, I mean, seriously, on a first date, I'd be like, look, here's the deal. I'm a single mom. My ex is a pedophile. I just lost my breasts. I don't have nipples yet. I'll probably get them in the next year. I got these scars. Mm-hmm. And if you're okay with that, you know, let's, I just want to get it out in the open.
I think it's great.
And it was so funny because it also makes you realize when you get things out in the open, how it creates the whole level of conversation changes. It's,
absolutely.
It's, there's no small talk.
Yeah.
I completely lost my ability for small talk.
Yeah.
Just went out the window. But it was such a liberating experience, which was so funny. Because
that's what I think is interesting too, is because here you were the exhaustion of going through all of that is very real, and the reality of any person, you know, you're not necessarily like this expectation that it's the whole courage thing, right? It's like the whole idea that that courage equals no fear, and that's not real. The courage is pushing through the fear. It's the same thing with, I would imagine, being in a position where you were rescuing yourself. You kept having to rescue yourself.
I did.
Tired, and rather than being like, and I love it. I'm sure there is, like, what a huge part of us is like, I'd love to not be going through this alone. Or I would love to know that I have a partner the next time. I don't want to have to keep doing this by myself. I can, but God, I don't want to.
Yeah.
You know?
And at first, I don't think I knew if I can. Mm-hmm. Like it was kind of like I was on a mission.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at first it's like dating became a job. And then when I got my cancer, and after my double mastectomy, my daughter started spending the weekends with my parents because I couldn't lift. I lost a lot of my mobility.
Mm-hmm.
So I had help with her during the week, but then I was still compromised.
Mm-hmm.
So when she was staying at my parents and my dad became like a father to mm-hmm. her, you know, she calls him her papa.
Mm-hmm.
When this was happening, I did all my dating on the weekends. So I was like obsessed. I mean, I would book dates for breakfast, lunch, dinner, you know, like always. I was just on a mission. And it's funny, like, you know, in retrospect, you can say why you were like that or why you did that or why. But when you're doing it, it was just like people are like, why did you just want to date so much?
Mm-hmm.
And it just seemed like the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
It just seemed like this is what I need. I need this more than I need therapy. Mm-hmm. I need to find goodness in men. I need to like, mm-hmm. I need to know. It's funny. It's like I need to know who I am in these situations. Who's
absolutely
the kind of guy I would choose now? Not who I thought I was, but who am I now?
Right.
And so much of that discovery happened with the dating. And the thing that was most amazing to me is, I was so nervous. Like when the doctor first, before I had my double, and he showed me like what it's going to look like. And he's like, isn't this nice? And I was like, no, there's scars. Like, it's not just a boob job. This is different.
Yeah.
And he's like, men aren't going to care. And I was like, oh, really? Men aren't going to care? Do you know my situation? I already have to say I'm a single mom whose ex is a pedophile. And now I have to say I don't have breasts.
Yeah.
You really think guys aren't going to care? But at that point, I was like, what do I got to lose? Can my life get any lower? No. You know? And I like people. I think that's my thing too. I'm fascinated by people.
That makes sense. I mean, it all really does make sense to me because there is, again, this sort of pushing past something. It's like, you know, when I had a fairly serious bike accident, I many people have since said to me, you're crazy. Why did you do that? But like the night I got home from the hospital, I wrapped like a t-shirt over my giant split chin and my chipped teeth and got and sore, covered in like black bruises all over my body. I rode my bike for 20 minutes in my neighborhood at night so no one could see me, like with a basically a pillow on my chin in case anything happened that it couldn't get worse, because I had to not be afraid.
Yeah.
I had to not be afraid of the thing that had caused this. And I think that, so that's why it resonates with me, is this idea of, you know, I'm not going to let this stop me from trusting people. I'm not going to let this stop me from liking people, from interacting with people, and from presenting myself to people I don't know, saying, guess what? I have this, this, and this, and I'm still out here. So what the fuck are you going to do about it? You know,
exactly.
I think that's really, you know, I like that.
It was. And what was so interesting to me is, like, I talked to other young women who've gone through this, who were like, I'm so afraid to take off my top and, like, show people my scars. And I get, like, letters from people over the country who, like, read different articles about me, my situation. And they're like, I'm so ashamed. Like, you made me laugh, at least. Like, you gave me hope. And I don't know if I could do it, though. And I was like, honestly, you have to accept it in yourself first before anyone else can. I think the thing that I went through was, I was so nervous before. And then when I looked down, I remember when I first saw what was where my breasts once were after the surgery, I was so afraid to look. I didn't look for 3 days.
And a friend
of mine was there, and she noticed, like, whenever the doctor would come by, I'd turn my head. And she's like, just look, Lisa. They don't look as bad as you think. And I looked down, and I think I had in my mind how bad they were going to look. And I was like, huh, this isn't too bad. Like, yeah. All right. They're like, and it's so funny because they don't really feel like they're a part of you yet. So you're like, you can look at them kind of objectively. You're like, okay, they're like these two little anthills. You've got these lines going across, but it's not that bad. And then that was such a freeing experience. And then I think the first guy I was with in my new state, when I tell him I didn't have nipples, I'm like, I'm just like Barbie.
I mean, that is a very familiar, iconic image that we all know what to wrap our heads around.
And I'm like,
and many people are very attracted to Barbie.
Exactly. And it's the only way I'm like Barbie. So use it to your advantage. You're a 5'2" redheaded, green-eyed Jewish girl. You're not like Barbie.
Except this one
way.
Yeah.
So, and I remember the first time I did the reveal, you know, to show a guy I was sleeping with my new breasts. And he said, you know what's so sexy about you? It's how comfortable you are in your body. And it was such an eye-opening experience for me, because I'm a kid who grew up with eating disorders. I'm a kid who was like bulimic, anorexic, all this stuff. And any little cellulite, any little this, any little that. And I'm like, now I have these things that are impossible to hide.
Yeah.
I have to give a disclosure. I got scars and no nipples, okay?
Yeah.
Here's the deal. I don't want you to freak out when I take off my top. I'm just going to prepare you, which is what I did with everybody.
Yeah.
And the thing that was so crazy was that they didn't care. And it was so freeing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you think a little cellulite's going to get me down?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't have nipples.
Yeah.
This is beautiful.
Yeah.
It's like everything is out in the open.
Yeah.
And you own it.
Yeah.
And it's like, you don't care anymore.
Yeah.
And it was such an eye-opening experience. Like, it was a beautiful experience.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love men. It was such a beautiful, reaffirming experience.
Yeah.
Because as women, we're so much more critical of our bodies than men are.
Yeah.
You know?
It's really crazy how that where it gets implanted and how it gets perpetuated.
Oh, and how early it gets implanted.
And when you really look at the person that you think you're worried about is not a problem, so what are you worried about?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? I think that's very compelling. And it's particularly challenging when you're in this business, but
it is.
This is unprecedented, of course, because now I've talked to you for an hour about stuff that has nothing to do with your teenage years, and you just dropped the eating disorder bomb on me. What I want to say, just to resolve this piece of it, so that I can ask you some questions about that time, is that you are happily married.
I'm happily married. Just to give you a recap of everything. My ex, there was a sentencing hearing. He's a registered sex offender for the rest of his life. I just got married. My ex just got his rights taken away. And my husband just adopted my daughter.
Oh, that's so great.
On August 17th.
Congratulations.
The first day before second grade started.
Oh, my gosh.
And we are a new family.
And
she's so happy to have a daddy, and a wonderful daddy, and a daddy who loves her more than anything. And I met him on my dating spree with no nipples, you know, and such a good guy.
Yeah.
Amazing.
That's so great. And also, I think, side note, I think in terms of counting your blessings amidst all of this crazy stuff that's happening, it sounds like it's pretty cool that your parents were nearby and together, you know?
They were.
A lot of us don't have that.
Yeah. I'm very lucky and I've got the best parents. Unfortunately, my dad passed away of Lou Gehrig's disease two years ago. It was brutal. It was brutal.
Oh, boy.
But I'm, you know.
Had such a great relationship with him though. You know, the best. To
like,
walk away
like my
with
dad,
that for both of you.
I mean, that's what I said at his eulogy. I'm like, I honestly don't have anything bad I could say about him, you know? It's like, he was so good.
That's lovely.
And I feel like I have a husband who really has that integrity and that goodness, like he's just so good and has character, you know?
Yeah.
And I do, I feel very blessed.
Yeah. Well, so I love this relationship with your father. I think that's what, gets pointed to a lot when we as younger people go through stuff. I remember that was like something that kept getting pressed at me when I was starting therapy and stuff. And when I was going through all my shit, which honestly, I'm not going to waste your time with, but you can listen to some of my old episodes and you'll be like, interesting. But I felt like that was kind of thrown at me a lot, especially with young women. It's like, how can I blame the dad? Like, that's how I felt at times.
Right.
When I was seeing there, and there were a couple of doctors that I saw, that like were unwilling to let that go. And I was like, you need to push past this. I have a wonderful relationship with my father. Whatever's going on in my brain chemistry or relationship with my mom or blah, 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 or this thing that happened to me that a stranger did, like whatever that, like don't, but I do feel like that's something that gets called up because it's very Freudian and people who are sort of schooled in that way want to find a way to like, well, you pick this guy because of your dad.
Exactly.
Or you were blamed because of your dad. It's like, that's just not how it is all the time.
Not
even often.
I completely agree.
Because we're a social group. We're living in this whole, I don't know. Anyway.
I completely agree because I mean, I never, until my husband right now, I never picked good guys. And my dad was such a great guy.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it was in me that was attracted to people that were so opposite of my dad, you know, but it was until, you know, this time around. So I completely agree with you.
Yeah. Do you, when you were here, were you interested in theater pretty early on?
I was always, I think because, well, I was very shy and I always felt different. And I think it was a way for me, like it was more comfortable for me to play other people than to be myself, or it was more comfortable for me to lose myself in somebody else.
Sure.
And it was at first, you know, and then it was a way of meeting people who were more kind of similar minded, I guess.
Especially if you're an emotional
or you,
kid. Safe place to go.
Yeah,
when
you feel like you're
what you
are. Yeah, it's like a way to connect.
And do you have siblings?
I do have a sibling. I have a brother.
Okay, older or younger?
Younger.
Okay,
younger.
And then and so, oh my god! Seems absurd for me to be like. And so, when did you become a believer? Like that's I don't know.
I talk very openly about it.
But in terms of like, it's we're just jumping around so much. But when did that manifest itself?
Oh god! Well, you know, it's funny, and I love my mom to death. I love my mom. Okay,
because it sounds to me like, as a person who got sober at 21, it sounds to me like
I did everything kind of early.
You're a highly sensitive person, as I am too.
Yes.
I started very early with stuff like that, with drugs and stuff like that. And a lot of it really had nothing to do with the way my parents treated me, or my system was overwhelmed all the time.
How do I control this
or how do I not control this but control not controlling it, or
like
however.
It's funny, I did a show, and this was a show I had a development deal with when all this went down, called The Monster Under My Bed Drank My Vodka. And basically from the time I was a kid, I talked about like how I always wanted to check out. And when I was in kindergarten, I mean, it's so early and you never know. Like, I'm like, why did I do that? It was so weird, you know, but it made so much sense to me at the time. I remember my mom would drop me off in front of the kindergarten door and I would run down to the bottom of the hill and I would walk to class, but I would take these little baby steps because I would tell myself, well, you're still going to class. You're just going to be like an hour late. And I would take these baby steps. I just like, for whatever reason, I didn't want to be where I was. And it was always so easy for me to kind of like check out and daydream and it was so weird. And from the time I was like when I was in, you know, first grade, second grade, I used to, my dad was a doctor and I used to fake having coughs. So he would give me cough syrup, you know, yeah. and the good cough syrup, the one with codeine, mm-hmm. not like the, you know, yucky yuck stuff. Yeah. So I always had that ability. And my mom was always obsessed with her weight. And I'll never forget because she told me once when I was a little girl that when she was like 14 or 15, she went out on a date and the guy said to her, "You're very pretty, but you should probably just lose some weight." And she carried that with her and it completely transferred to me. Yeah. And to this day,
that's a play, that is, and certainly there's an example of something that can be very direct. You know? Yeah. It can be so direct from your parents and is, and can be so not from your parents.
Oh, and to this day, and like I said, I love my mom dearly, but to this day, she weighs herself like twice a day. My mom's like a machine, you know?
Yeah.
But it's funny. So I remember when I was growing up, and you know, you get like the little bag of Doritos in your lunch, or the little bag, I knew my little bag of Doritos had 80 calories, you know, like in first or second grade. Like I remember looking at my calories. I remember skipping breakfast. Cause I was like, I remember like what, like my weight in like third and fourth grade. And I was like glad that my weight was like little and like my best friend's weight was a lot more than, like, I remember these things and I was like, Jesus, like my daughter has no concept of this. And I make sure she has no concept of this. Like, even when I want to lose weight, I'm just like, I just want to get more healthy. Yeah, I don't use that. I want to lose weight because I don't want her to grow up with this. So I started becoming bulimic in like sixth grade was when it started.
It's so hard to, because I think about what I was going through and I think about what people I care about and people I'm meeting. Like, just to think about, because for me, I project back and in a weird way, I'm still like myself as an adult, kind of in a weird way, like in that place. And then when you see a picture of that kid, it's like, oh my God.
It's so, it's
I was a baby.
I know you're
a baby.
Yeah, I was. But when you're that age, you don't, think you're a baby.
Of course not.
And I remember, so I used to do these things and so I wouldn't eat basically every day that week. And then one day a week, I'd eat everything I wanted to eat that whole week. And I'd have until midnight to eat. And I'd make a list of like everything I wanted to eat that whole week. So I'd have to make myself eat it. And then I'd throw it up after. So that's kind of when it started. And then during the week, I would have like, I'd cut up a lemon and I'd put Equal on it. And I'd suck on lemons. I'd see how many calories my Trident sugar-free gum had. Yeah. I was drinking coffee in like sixth grade and I'd add like, you know, and I was just, yeah. And then I talk about this on my first show, but I was always really into music. So I had my favorite song to throw up to.
Oh, honey.
Which was Billy Joel. She's Always a Woman to Me.
Oh no.
And I'd always wait for the part where he'd go, "Oh, she takes care of herself."
Oh God, Lisa, and then come on, do you're it. Breaking my heart.
I was just, I don't know. It was like, I remember even at that age, it's just
ritual.
Thinking like,
look, you come it's up with ritual. These rituals. Which, by the way, there are versions of that. I mean, anybody who listens to my podcast on a regular basis knows that what has worked best for me in terms of how I feel about food, because it's an issue for me too,
right,
is to do the sort of like really responsible and then one meal that's a cheat.
Me
like
too.
At the, you know, and I know, and I've said like, I got to be really careful with that because for me, it's about the freedom to just go, I don't have to count calories. I don't have to think
me
about
too.
It. Fuck it. I can do it and feel great about it, but I have to feel great about it because if I'm not going to feel great about it, if I'm going to eat to the point of sickness, there's something going on there that I have to look at and go back off. That's a behavior that's leaning into danger. You know what I mean? Like finding that balance and exercising those muscles in that
I
sense.
I still
very
do
important.
It because there's a part of me that's like, well, if I have to have boundaries with something, then what's the point?
Yeah.
You know? So like if I'm going to eat chocolate chip cookies, which is my favorite
that's
dessert
how I
in the world.
I mean,
world.
That's what I'm like, I just want to
eat all week or all day.
Right. Well, I guess the thing is like, it is, if you recognize the abusive tendency, if it is like, I can't have one drink, you know, that's
exactly.
not how I am with alcohol at all. Like
right.
I don't really drink, but if I have a glass of wine, I'm like, oh, that's, I don't need any more like
right,
indigestion
right.
than that or whatever. And some people can't do that. But for me, you know, because it's sugar, for me, if I'm going to have sugar, I know that I want to have the permission to overdo it.
Me too.
Not to the point of sickness, but to the point of I don't have to worry that I just ate five cookies, because I'm not going to eat five cookies the rest of the week. I'm
me
just
going to,
you know what I'm saying?
Me too. I'm
and
the
I think
same
that's
way.
It, but it is that sort of thing where you have to like, I have to look at it and keep a check on it, or, you know, and that's sort of what that whole like 4 hour body or whatever it is, him saying, you know, if you can maintain this and feel good about yourself and then have that opportunity to go like, I'm a kid, I'm going crazy. And then the next day you wake up and you're like, I'm glad I don't do that every day. I don't want to do that every day.
Exactly.
That's sort of a way to keep it in check. But it's very tricky.
It's tricky.
Especially if you come from that past.
It's tricky. It's like the all or nothing thing. I remember the first time I ate like a dessert in front of my husband, he like looked at me and he goes, oh my God, your eyes are dilating.
Oh my God, I totally
like with
get
sugar.
It.
And he's like,
I think it's very common for women. That's
I think
part
so
of the
too.
Reason that this thing perpetuates itself is the actual physiological. Like it's I can't so have true. Just straight sugar anymore. I would get
I don't
so
even
sick.
Like straight sugar. For me, it's usually baked things and it's usually when it's hot.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like hot chocolate chip cookie pie. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or hot chocolate chip cookie. It's so funny. I actually had a dream about you last night.
You did?
I
That's
did.
So funny.
I had a dream that I was here. It was so random. And it was just me, you, and Howard Stern. Howard Stern was here too.
Sure,
and we
I'm
were
sorry,
all
Howard
eating chocolate
here.
Chip cookies.
That is so funny.
Isn't that funny?
Howard
it was
Stern.
So like random.
That's so
it was
funny.
Just like the three of us were just sitting here eating chocolate
I
chip
love
cookies.
It. I
and
love
I was
it.
Like, this is fun.
That's amazing.
It's my cheat day.
That's amazing. God, I can really relate to it. Listen, Sunday's mine, so I'm looking forward to tomorrow. Here's the thing. I want to get into this MASH game because that is how I finish out the episode. And I want you to know that the question I always ask somewhere in this game is, I'm going to start with it for you because we're just talking about it, is that three foods that you could have in this imaginary world in perpetuity at the snap of a finger that has no physical ramifications. We're just living, checking out.
Yeah,
this game
is
your opportunity to just check out for 10 minutes.
I love it.
On the show.
I love it.
In an undamaging way. It's just like, be a kid. Imagine that. What three things do you wish you could just have?
Okay, the first thing, my number one, hot chocolate chip cookies out of the oven.
Love it, love it, love it.
Yeah.
God, I can just conjure that smell.
Now, I have a question. Like, if I say like hot chocolate bundt cake with chocolate chips, is that like a separate thing or is it still under the same kind of...
I can put this in the same category.
In the same category.
I can say warm baked goods is this category.
With chocolate chips.
It's
the chocolate
it,
chip
With chocolate
thing.
Chips.
Yeah.
If you want
Lots of chocolate
it.
Chips.
And then if you have two other things that are slightly different from that, I feel very comfortable letting you use that category.
Okay, so then I'll put two others in the same category again that are different.
Mm-hmm.
Fresh hot pizza and fresh hot bread.
Great.
Bread, like out of the oven. I'm just a sucker for when something's hot and out of the oven.
Yep.
Yeah, like so fresh hot pizza and fresh...
I love it. Hot.
Okay, and my third, they kind of go together, uh-huh. so I guess I could use them together, is a cheeseburger and french fries.
Great, cheeseburger and french fries.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
With pickles. And cheddar cheese.
I was just listening to one of my favorite podcasts and someone was going off on how much they hate pickles. And I thought, I'm so happy that I like pickled things because that's one thing that actually is so good for you. Like all the probiotics. Like I eat so much.
Really?
Like,
are pickles?
Fancy. Especially, well, I eat, and if I don't know if you've gone down this road, if you want to have less pickles and less salt and more.
That's what I'm asking
well,
about.
Well, I eat this, and guys, I haven't brought up my obsession with this particular kind of sauerkraut before. But there's like, at Whole Foods, there is this kind of artisanal, kind of pickled probiotic, like different, they pickle different things and like.
And it's probiotic? Pickled probiotics?
Yeah, because there's natural probiotics. Like, it's like having. Like a version of yogurt or something. A lot of probiotics exist in pickled stuff.
Uh-huh.
And so that's why I like pickled cabbage is really good for you because it has this kind of probiotic.
See, I
whatever.
Just thought the cabbage was, I didn't know the pickling part
no,
of it.
No, it's the pickling
it.
Process.
Oh, that's
it's the pickling
so
process.
Interesting.
I'll show it to you when I'm
interesting,
done.
Interesting.
This one has a rame and ginger and seaweed.
Ooh,
and so it's this kind
yummy.
Of Japanese flavor and I will put it on anything. Like I just love it.
Yeah.
I
love
it. So that's
it.
One
like
thing that's actually
stuff.
Good for me that in my mind
I like
pickled
stuff.
Oh, thank God,
I'll have
like
to,
that.
I'll have to take a picture of it.
I'm going to show you. Don't you even worry. Okay, next one is, as long as we're in the checkout process, three imaginary worlds that you can go into and enjoy, whether it's like a film, you know, but it's real. So it can be as imaginary as Narnia, or it can just be like, I wish I could go hang out with, I don't know who and what movie, but in New York, like the New York of blank movie.
Right,
do you know what I'm saying?
Right. Okay, well, the one that I always just, my eyes just go, huh, is Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
I know. Listen, get in line.
And I love that world. I love the look, like when they walk into the room and the chocolate fountain and they just see everything, and it's just so,
I know. The whole, that whole process so beautiful. Of them all tasting something when he's singing.
And I love when he sings, come with me.
Yeah.
That song makes me cry.
Me too.
And we'll be.
Yeah. Don't ever show your daughter the second one with Johnny Depp.
No, I won't. Ever. I won't. I haven't even seen it.
Yeah.
I saw it. I'm
with
like
someone's
purist.
Daughter because they were, it was like my movie with my childhood friend. And he was like, I'm going to take my daughter to see it. And then we saw it and we were like, oh God, what a huge mistake.
No, I had. Really. So the first
I've
Willy
wiped
Wonka.
It from my memory. Great.
First Willy Wonka for sure.
Great. Love it.
There's a part of me, I was really into Mad Men. So there's a part of me that just like loves that. Like the 1950s kind of like, I love the... And if I was able to, there's a part of me that still gets so drawn to the drinking and the smoking.
Sure. Well, this is an imaginary world.
And it's an imaginary world. So if I could just drink and smoke
and
like
there's
that
no ramifications.
And wear some of those outfits and
I totally get it.
You know,
I totally get it.
Yeah.
That's
I like
great.
That
that's great.
World. And then I think a very solar kind of universal moon star kind of world. It's like seeing the world through my daughter's eyes and the world like
gorgeous.
She creates, because she,
oh, I
mean,
love
from the
that.
Time she was like 2 years old or 3 years old, no, like two and a half. She's like, Mommy, I found the moon. I found the moon again. Like, she loves the moon and the stars. The moon and the stars are everything to her. And so I get to appreciate like the moon and the stars. And she even said to me once, she's like, you know, Mommy, she goes, I used to be with the moon and the stars. And then I decided to come down into your tummy to be with you.
Oh, my God. Come on.
So she's very like, so I love that like link in. And whenever I look at the moon and the stars and also the ocean, I'm like that with the ocean, but I like the ocean when it's dark.
And, me too.
And just like hearing it and just the vastness of it and the losing yourself in it. And mountains and trees, like lots of mountains and trees, but like the moon and the stars and just
it.
Like this world with my daughter that she creates and through her eyes, I want to be
gorgeous.
A part of.
That's gorgeous.
Yeah.
I also want to go there and I haven't met your daughter. Is that creepy?
Yeah.
Okay. Next category is, listen, this is a perennial classic. All due respect to your wonderful husband, whose virtues you just extolled ad infinitum. This is a fantasy world. It can be someone you just want to like ride on a train with and have sex with once, or it can be someone that is like your, you know, alternate universe husband, but it's Paul Newman when he's 30. You know what I'm saying? So
God.
You can go anytime, any person. I guess ideally it's someone we know.
When you
who
said
it is.
Paul Newman when he was 30,
you know, just like toss that guy in there.
God, we
so you
have
can go
to.
Anywhere with
you
that.
Know. Be- I have this picture of Marlon Brando when it was like Streetcar Named Desire picture,
right.
And just that. That kind of raw animalistic masculinity with that boyish kind of like,
and this is a relationship where you don't actually have to be with that person because you know you'd rather be with your husband,
and
but like to have that sort of.
He didn't look too good at the end.
Granted, granted.
I you know. I love the character of Don Draper.
Mm-hmm. Great. Throw him in there. You're not alone.
And, well, there's...
I feel like you're making good use of this because these are all people that you wouldn't choose to be with in
life.
This
exactly.
This is just like the perfect... This is like all the good and none of the bad.
Yes,
the
exactly. Mm-hmm. Completely.
It's great.
And then there's... Gosh, this is hard. Oh, I know there's someone I'm forgetting. And I like when I see him, I'm like, oh, my God. And I'm trying to remember who that is.
Mm-hmm.
My husband would actually know who that is.
I wonder if that's an amazing question to ask him. What is it? Do you mean that he comes up like he's a contemporary versus like somebody from the older times?
Yeah, he's a contemporary.
Well, I'll tell you who my last guest, Roy Osmansky, named two of the people because I embrace that and they feel like they kind of come in here. But she mentioned Idris Elba. And Clive Owen. Those were
some, Clive Owen is someone I've thought of.
That smoldering
as well.
Sort of,
yeah, the Clive Owen. Yeah, I had a British boyfriend. Oof. That accent. Me and my friend used to listen to him over and over again on the answering machine.
Totally.
We're like, this is like,
I dated a Scottish guy. Same thing. I realize now I had no interest in him beyond
me
his accent.
Too. I'm just
poor
like,
thing.
Just talk.
Yeah, yeah.
Just
do you want me to put
something.
Him down?
No,
because you feel him.
You know
you
what it is. You know what's funny?
There.
I have like a crush in a different way. I like to think of it as more intellectual side on Jon Stewart.
Oh, sure.
Because I mean, I think he's
made
so
this list before.
Funny, he's and he's just like
so smart, absolutely.
Smart and funny.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah.
Okay. Next one is three places in the world that it would be fun to have a vacation home.
Okay, and they could be places I've never been to.
Mm-hmm, totally.
You
totally,
know?
Totally.
Italy.
Great.
I don't know where in Italy, but somewhere in
you
Italy.
You kind of can't go wrong. In
yeah.
Italy. So
Italy. I love Italy. Spain.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why this just came to me, but I don't even know anything about it. But I'm just going to say it. But yeah. I don't think it's where I really want to go. The Ozark.
Oh, you know what? It's interesting.
I just like
that
came to me. I'm like, the Ozark. And I'm like, what is the Ozark? I'm not even sure
well,
I know.
Well, the Ozark Mountains.
It's cold,
are,
right?
No. Oh, no. The Ozark Mountains are in the United States.
Oh, they are.
But it's really funny because that's like what people think of when they think of like hillbillies. And then I've talked to people who are like, oh, no, it's one of the most beautiful places in the world. But if that's not what you mean,
I meant to like
the
I don't
Arctic
know.
Or something?
Maybe
yeah.
It was just like a word that came to me, so I thought I'd just
I gotta
go
tell
with
you,
it.
I'm real into the idea of you having like. Here's why, because what you described about the mountains, there's no ocean, but the mountains and the trees and seeing being able to see the stars so clearly because you're in the middle of the wilderness. Mm-hmm. That's what the Ozarks are like.
Oh,
like
real? That's so funny.
Mountain range.
And I didn't
very
even
undiscovered.
I didn't even know that.
Well, listen, we're gonna throw that right in.
There's
there.
A lot I
right.
don't know.
Yeah, but you could
and
have a beautiful
one of those
cabin
things.
Up there. next one, let's say, oh boy, this is a very dark interpretation of what you were talking about with having your throw up song. And I mean that with love.
Thank you.
Because I have to make fun of the things that are upsetting for me in my life. So I assume you do the same since we have this
I
show
do,
that people
absolutely.
Should go see. Is what three songs that you wish that you're like, oh, you didn't know that was written about me? It is.
Oh God!
Or written for me,
for
or like
me, or,
I was with that, but like, oh, you didn't know that I inspire. I was Joni Mitchell's best friend, and she actually wrote blah 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 when we were hanging out. I wrote most of the lyrics.
Okay, what I'm trying to think. It's always songs that I used to cry to.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to think of the songs I used to cry to.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's a song that Ben Folds sings that is that I know he wrote for his wife.
Mm-hmm. Not in this world.
And then they got divorced. But I am the luckiest.
Aww.
And it just talks about how like what I don't know. It's just such a beautiful song. And
great.
Whenever I heard that, I was like, I want to meet someone who.
Great.
I mean, he did write that song about me.
There you go. Well, yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Duh.
Easy peasy. And then I understand there were two other songs that
inspired
by you.
Well, of course, I like you just the way you are.
Great, great, great.
Every guy sings that to me.
Great.
And I said, you know, BJ wrote that with me in mind, not Christy Brinkley.
That's right.
Of course.
That's right.
And, this is hard.
I know. I really throw a lot of stuff at you.
I know.
At
I'm trying
end.
To think because I really take these things seriously. Like, because I love music.
I have a little cough, and I wonder if your dad could give me some of his special cough syrup.
I wish you were still around to do that. I wish being a doctor's daughter, I could write prescriptions.
It's not inherited. You
no.
don't inherit his prescription
Damn.
Pad and license.
I don't.
Away?
I don't.
It's a shame.
My dad's laughing at me right now. Okay. What. Oh God. Okay. I'm a sucker for musicals. And speaking of my dad, the first musical, my favorite musical is The Fantastics.
Oh, I've never seen it. You're not the first person to bring that up. And I'm annoyed that I haven't seen
it. I love The Fantastics. And there's this song that's called They Were You.
Mm-hmm.
And, the guy and the girl sing it to each other at the end.
Adorable.
It's so beautiful.
I love it. I love it. Great
it's
choices.
Gorgeous.
Great choices. Okay, next one will be, I've been doing this one lately. A wonderful listener suggested it to me. It is And you can kind of take it into the abstract if you need to. And I don't even know if that makes sense, but you're here in a second. If you could have three items from when you were younger, and it could be like a little toy, plush toy that you missed, but it could also just be like, I had the most killer crimping iron. I've never found one since. You know what I mean? Like just things that were iconic to you when you were younger.
Okay. I had this little Minnie Mouse.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a rubber kind of thing that my dad gave me probably when I was probably in kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
And when my parents were separated, which they never told me, but I knew something was going on. Mm-hmm. I knew it. I just didn't see dad that often mm-hmm. anymore. I lost that. And I just remember being so devastated. It was this little pink rubber Minnie Mouse.
Mm-hmm. That's what this category is for.
So that. And I had this stuffed animal, like a lamb whose name was Amanda.
Oh, Amanda.
And my dad gave me that too.
Oh, I love it. It's a lamb named Amanda.
And Amanda, I used to hold so tightly around the neck, so her neck. Her neck was loose. Her neck like always swayed. She had no stuffing in her neck anymore. And then she finally like broke. And then like when I went away to college, I came back and Amanda was gone.
Amanda
was gone.
Oh, no. God, that's great.
And trying to think of a third thing. Those two just came like right mm-hmm. up for me.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm just sitting here silently thinking about anything for me, too.
I know. I'm trying to think. Like, those two were just so strong
for
me.
Yeah, those precious little talisman kind of things. I feel like
And speaking of the Fantastics, my dad had a record of the Fantastics.
Oh, great.
And that was one of his first records. And he took my mom on a first date or second date to the Fantastics. One of their first dates, they went there.
Amazing.
And then he took me when I was 5, too.
Amazing.
So it's like so something having to do with the Fantastics.
Yeah, I got
to like
get into the Fantastics.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Second to last category will be imagine that you can magically add a room on to your current house.
Okay.
And it can be anything. It can be wildly imaginative. It can be someone... said that like the bubble room in Willy Wonka
where they go
up. Or it could just
be
like, I wish I had a room for like a greenhouse or something like that. But just imagine that there's no problem with space and it's, it can go as wild as you want or as simple as you want.
I would have a room that's like a planetarium.
So love it. Have you taken your daughter to the planetarium, by the way?
I haven't
yet. You guys got to get up there.
Oh, yes. You know what? Yes, I did. But she was super, super young.
Yeah, she probably doesn't.
So I would have like, so there'd be like no roof at all, mm-hmm. but this like a dome of where you see like the stars and the moon and you see everything. And then there's telescopes all around there.
I love it.
And then there's like couches and beds and then it can open like a sunroof.
Oh my gosh, she would never leave that room.
I'd never leave that room.
That's gorgeous. Now I need two more. I don't know how you're going to top that.
Oh, I need two more?
Yeah, because it's a...
I get three?
And then I'm going to do a process of elimination at the end and I'll tell you like,
three.
You got this.
Okay, so then I'd have like my forest room.
Love it.
With all different kinds of trees.
Love it. God, I love it.
And then I'd have my soft and cuddly room where mm-hmm. everything in there is like cushions and soft, tactile, my big tactile room. And it's really, really bright.
I love it.
And it's...
This is the best use of the additional room I've ever seen. You've definitely won. And then last one is, let's do... Let me think about this. Let's do... Maybe like a career in the alternate universe, like something that for whatever reason, it's not like you would necessarily want to do it here, but maybe. But you know, in this alternate universe, you have this other thing that you're able to do, whether it's you own a business or you teach or you know.
I always tell people like one thing I want to do, but you can't make any money doing it. Is be a cat watcher.
Amazing,
because I just love watching my cats.
I couldn't love this more.
What they're going to do next.
Yeah.
But can't really make a good living doing that.
I grant
yet.
You that.
Yet.
Yeah. Yeah. I love this. In this world, you're very wealthy because you're a cat watcher.
Yeah. You just like watch your cats. Mm-hmm. Definitely something with kids. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if it's preschool. I just like hanging out with kids, but I don't, it would be a job where you kind of just get to play with them and mm-hmm. hang out with them, but you don't really have like really bratty kids and you don't yeah. really have to discipline them.
You're just like a buddy.
And you're just kind of like a buddy.
Play buddy.
And you could just do things together and just like
agreed.
Hang with kids, like in a total like playroom mm-hmm. kind of environment.
I love it.
And the third one I think would have to do with kids too, like being a kid's coach or something.
Oh, sure.
Not like a sports coach, but like a coach and making them feel good about mm-hmm. themselves or
self-esteem building.
Self-esteem building, like something with kids and self-esteem.
I love it. Oh, I have just the thing I need to talk to you about. Have you ever heard of the Art of Elysium?
No.
It's a great organization here and they always need volunteers, even for just like an hour to like play with kids in the waiting room of a children's hospital.
I would totally do that. Yeah, we'll talk after.
I gotta tell you about it. You're gonna love it because that's my, like, that's what this is. Okay. And then this, because this is a MASH game, old school style, I just need you to tell me when to stop.
Mm-hmm. Stop.
Okay. And I'm going to pause this. And when I come back, I'm going to reveal your 100% guaranteed MASH future.
Exciting.
I got some real good news for you.
Oh, good.
Now, listen, I'm going to tear the Band-Aid off right away because, mansion, apartment, shack, and house is what MASH stands for. Mansion, apartment, shack, and house.
Okay.
You did get a shack.
Okay.
But the shack is in Italy.
All right. I can deal.
So my feeling is, you know, it might be on like the coast and, you know, it's just a sort of little place you go into.
I'll deal with a shack on the Amalfi Coast.
The Amalfi Coast. There you
that
go.
That sounds perfect.
It's fine. It's fine. You don't want some huge house that you never leave because you've got to be out there in the world.
Just a 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 square foot shack.
I was
going to
say, wait a minute. I think if you're on the Amalfi Coast, that is considered
a
shack.
Yeah, exactly, right?
It then also surprises me not at all that at the snap of a finger, without any physical ramifications, you can have all the hot baked bread and pizza, pasta. Listen, you're in Italy. It's perfect.
It's Italy.
It's perfect. And it doesn't surprise me that you're sharing it with Smoldering Marlon Brando. That also feels very right. Like you guys have like these big passionate
fights
in Italy.
Did you ever see Last Tango?
There you go. It's like Last Tango on a Amalfi Coast.
But no butter. No butter.
You have, in addition, and by the way, yes, you have this quote-unquote shack, but we both know that you have room for your planetarium room, so your daughter's going to be just fine. This is technically almost cheating because it's not an extra room, but there's got to be some place for you to have to do all your cat watching for people.
I agree.
So that's a thing.
That's
I love
just
that
a
you're
given,
a
though,
watcher.
Isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's true, but you did get it. Technically. Also, if you just need a break from all of this marvelousness and you want to get into a different world, you can pop into Mad Men and just be as chic as you desire.
I love that.
And then when you get lonely and you want to come back, there are two things that will make you feel right at home again. Number one, listening to the song about you from the Fantastics, They Were You, and hugging your lamb, Amanda.
Aww.
So I think this turned out pretty great.
I'm so happy.
Pretty great. Where can people find you and when can they see you and
they
how can
they see
you?
My show. Oh, come see Dating in LA with No Nipples.
It's very, very literal, guys. You don't have to wonder
what
literal.
Is
the show
I
about.
I actually went on over, 70 first dates altogether, but 50 under reconstruction. And that's
amazing.
How I met my husband.
Amazing.
Yes, you can go on datinginlawithnonipples.com.
So
and
that
you can
wasn't
get
taken?
Tickets
Fair.
There. No, it wasn't. And I got datinginlawithnonipples.net. I got them dot all everything.
Congratulations.
Yeah, because I know everyone's going to want to take
right.
Dating in
That's
LA
right.
with no
Better
nipples.
Better safe than sorry.
And or lisakatedavid.com.
LisaKateDavid.com.
Yeah, and you can get the information. But yes, it's running every Wednesday starting October 7th for Breast Cancer Awareness Month.
Wonderful.
And my last night, which is November 11th, is going to be a benefit for Stand Up to Cancer.
Awesome. Guys, is there anything, can people do anything if they, I mean, I do have listeners all across the world, so someone in, you know, Sweden probably can't come to your show. Is there anything that they can do or be a part of, like they donate
they can,
remotely?
They can
or?
Give me money.
Great.
They can, I'll take donations.
Okay,
I'll take
great.
Money. They should just, you know, fly out for a couple days to
okay,
see the
great.
Show. I'm
fair.
Sure it's
That's
worth
a fair
it.
Demand.
It's worth
a fair
it.
Request.
It's
yeah.
worth it.
Yeah.
Especially if you're in Sweden.
You know what I mean?
It can get a little depressing
from that horrible
there.
Country.
Yeah.
Only
yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Lisa. This has been amazing. And thank you for sharing all of
Absolutely.
Those things. I definitely get a lot of letters from people who have really gone through a lot. And I know that this will be very comforting and,
well,
and
I
funny
also,
and warm for, you know, people who are going through it now.
I'm glad. I'm really glad. I mean, that's two of the reasons. I mean, well, there's so many reasons I want to tell my story. But one of the things I'm starting to do, too, and I want to do more of. So if someone who's listening to this feels like it would be a good match. I'm starting to do speaking engagements for different women's and children's shelters.
Love it.
And then also for terrific. Breast cancer awareness places, because there's so many women who are afraid to take off their tops.
Yeah.
And it's my experience was amazing. And if I can help out however I can. And
I think that's so wonderful.
I want to.
It's
so
very inspiring.
So yes,
awesome.
Thank you, JV.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you. Guys, talk to you next time on the podcast. As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.